Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed, "I found nirvana! I win!" They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $365 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Thursday morning therapy here on Off the Ball Breakfast. You want some? 0879-180-180. You can just give us a voice note and we'll cancel whatever worries you have about anything in the world. Except for...
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Good evening, you're very welcome along to Thursday Night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Coming up, we're going to be joined by Shane Ryan of Golf Weekly fame to tell us what's going on at Aronimink in the US PGA. The big story maybe early doors is Jordan Spieth. Could he potentially be on the verge of completing the Grand Slam? Recent form would suggest no, but his first round form would suggest maybe. From 8 o'clock, we've got Richie Hogan live in studio, as we always do on Thursday nights here on Off the Ball. You can get your messages in now for Richie. Any questions? And then from 9 to 10, Kevin Kilbane is going to join us to talk about the VAR drama last night, maybe a little bit on last Sunday. We're going to talk a lot about Spygate. We'll talk about the FA Cup as well as Manchester City versus Chelsea in the Cup Final at Wembley this Saturday afternoon. Our number is 0879-180-180 if you do want to get in touch. Dan Pitcher will be bringing you the News Round momentarily. Hello, Dan.
Good evening again.
Ben Symes, on the eve of the biggest day of his life, is here. Hello, Ben.
Owen, how are you?
I'll come to that in just a moment. John Duggan, how are you getting on?
Owen, Ben and Daniel, very good evening.
So Ben, you're doing two big things tomorrow. You know, part A of your job is to bring Vinnie Perth safely back to the confines of Oriel Park. Part B is you're doing your first ever commentary on national radio. But let's forget about that. Bringing Vinnie Perth back to Oriel Park tomorrow. How do you feel about that?
There's a lot of pressure, isn't there?
A lot of pressure.
Yeah, the text went out to Vinnie last week. And I think just before he said everything, I said, okay, he was talking to Mick McCarthy, obviously our co-worker, and he said, "Mick, deep breath." And then he said, "I have not been back since I emptied out my desk in 2021, 2022, when he was brought back into the club to 2021 to save them from relegation." I'm really looking forward to this. I would like to think that Vinny's going to get a great reception from fans at Dundalk, and they would have nothing but nice things to say to him and nice memories of it. Like he's the last manager to win the Premier Division with Dundalk. When he came in the second stint, you know, he left kind of under weird circumstances the first time when the new owners came in, and then they begged him to come back in and he saved them from relegation, which was, I think, is quite glossed over how good a job he did in that second term. I'd like to think there'd be no ill will from any Dundalk fans at all. I think Vinny was a bit worried about that. I don't think it's...
He never really left them in like bad shape. Like he left them in a good position both times.
Yeah, exactly that. And that's kind of the way I was looking at things. But yeah, I gave him a little text this afternoon just to make sure that that he's ready and looking forward to it. We might get down there early and see if we can do some stuff around the place before we get going with the commentary.
Yeah, that would be great. It's an 8 p.m. kickoff tomorrow evening, by the way. Dundalk versus Shamrock Rovers. And as you've heard there, Ben Symes on commentary alongside Vinnie Perth. So very best of luck with that, Ben.
John,
you've been keeping a close eye on what's happening at Aronimink today, just watching Scotty Scheffler here taking a few practice swings. This is going to be a big evening for him potentially, because the scoring hasn't been outrageous. This could be the sort of day where he tees off now and potentially rips up the field. What are you feeling?
I remember Justin Rose winning at this track a few years ago when it was a PGA Tour course, and it's a classic American parkland course. You know, you need to be good with your approach shots from your second shot. It does suit players that are good off the tee and can drive it far, but it's all about your approach shots and putting yourself in the right position on the greens, which are difficult. So 3 under par is where what we have, four players at the moment tied on 3 under par. And obviously the story from our perspective, you always start with Rory, don't you? And Rory is, at the moment, he is 3 over par. So he's 6 shots off the lead. And
the toe affecting him?
I don't know about that. I think maybe it's a rust issue. I think that you just can't expect him to turn up at every major and win one. Just come off back-to-back wins of the Masters, 6 major championships now. And He won the PGA twice, but he hasn't won it in 12 years. And I'm just looking at his stats here. 3 over par, 1 hole to play for his round. He's had 4 bogeys in his last 5 holes. Off the tee, 104th approach, 74th around the green, 98th tee to green, 93rd putting, 79th. It only says one word to me, and that's rust.
Okay.
He was saying yesterday that since they moved this championship to this time of year, he hasn't done well versus when it used to be, what, in August?
Yeah, correct, when he won at Kiawah and Valhalla, when it was the last major of the year. So it is a bit of a strange championship. It's funny, the last 10 PGAs have been won by American players because they're generally playing these kind of parkland golf tournaments most of the time. Rory, Patrick Harrington and Martin Kaymer are the only Europeans to have won it since 1930 when Tommy Armour won.
It's mad.
And he became an American citizen. Ultimately, he was born in Scotland, though. So it's not been a happy hunting ground for European golfers. The last English golfer to win was 1919, Jim Barnes, who I know is going to roll off everybody's tongue. you've had marquee winners. I mean, in the last 10 years, I think the cream has come to the top. Scottie Scheffler, the world number one, won it last year. But you've also had players that would be very good golfers, but not Hall of Fame inductees. I'm thinking of Sean McKeel, Rich Beam, Jeff Sluman, that you wouldn't roll off the tongue again as PGA Championship winners. There's 98 of the top 100 in the world are in here. And anybody who really has a lifetime week can win a major championship. We've seen that in the players I've just named. What is interesting for me is that Bryson DeChambeau has had a mare. He's 6 over par and in the clubhouse already. You'd have to say his championship might be over. With all these things, it's not about sometimes who can win it on the first couple of days, but it's who can lose it. And John Rahm as well has had only a reasonable start to the tournament. But I'm interested to see Xander Schauffele, if that's the way you pronounce his name, a former winner of the tournament on 2 under par. I think he's made a nice start of the past champions.
Yeah, first round of 68 for him, and that brilliant 3-ball of Scheffler, Fitzpatrick and Justin Rose have all dissected the first gigantic fairway there at Aronimink, so it could be good evening's golf. Thoughts on Jordan Spieth, John? Any inkling or hope that this might be the week he completes the Grand Slam?
Well, the thing about it is, it's what, 2015 since he won a major? No, 2017. I was actually there in Birkdale when he won the Open. Yeah, 2017. So that's what, 9 years? And the thing about it is, if you're 9 years outside the major circle and you can't win tournaments, he won the Heritage a couple of years ago, but that's the worry that you might be able to put it together for 2 rounds, 3 rounds, 3.5 rounds. Can you put it together for 4 rounds? Watching Jordan Spieth over the last few years, sometimes his long game is really good. Sometimes his putting is really good. But that X factor thing that he had when he burst onto the scene is not there as much as it was. And that would make me surprised if he won this week. But it is interesting that he is. We all talk about Rory in the career Grand Slam. Spieth has had it going for years, but just because it's the PGA, not the Masters, it's been kind of hidden as a narrative.
John, can I ask you your opinions on this championship as a whole? Because I have great memories of the PGA Championship, and like you mentioned, maybe winners who are not going to be Hall of Fame golfers. I always remember Jason Duffner's win, and these kind of golfers who can get their one time major.
Jimmy Walker.
I always think of that when I think of the PGA Championship. Is it kind of held at a level a little bit below the other three for that reason?
I think it is, because originally it was a match play tournament until the 50s. So when you think about it, 3 of the 4 majors are played in the United States. One of them is utterly unique. One of them has always been seen as brutally tough, the US Open. And it has felt for many years that the PGA has been US Open light. Even the courses they go to have been former US Open courses a lot of the time. So therefore, is it just too similar to the US Open, but just a little bit easier? But that said, the winners of the tournament in the last few years, like Brooks Koepka, Scottie Scheffler, Rory, have all, like Justin Thomas, have all been top players. Xander Schauffele, who I've just mentioned. So I think if you ask Lee Westwood or Luke Donald or Colin Montgomery or any of these golfers how much they'd love to win a PGA Championship, they'd bite your hand off, obviously. And we had Patrick winning it, as I said, after 78 years, the first person born in Europe to win a PGA Championship. And that tournament itself with Garcia was one of the battles for the ages.
Rory has bogeyed the last really poor putt up the hill. He's going to finish on 4 over for his first round. And that is not a good start for the back-to-back Masters champion.
But it's interesting, Ben. I mean, if you were to pick audience, one, would you want to win the PGA ahead of the other three? You'd probably say no, wouldn't you?
But no, I'm not a hope.
No, of course not. Yeah. It's four consecutive bogeys to finish out his round for McIlroy. 5 bogeys in his last 6, although there's a birdie in there as well. So that is a pretty disastrous back 9 from McIlroy. He would have taken a steady enough round going into Friday's play. John, just before we get into the news round, I mean, all the talk about last night's sporting action, certainly when it comes to the football show later, is going to be around Motherwell and the VAR controversy there against Celtic. Your eyes were firmly fixated on the under-20s hurling.
Well, I obviously my father was from Clare, so I just do have a Clare leaning to this. And I was watching the Clare-Tipperary-Munster under-20 hurling final on TG Carr last night. I just thought it was fantastic. It was a game full of jeopardy, went to extra time, went to penalties. And look what it's done for the promotion of Gaelic Games, the ESPN mentioning Mark Sheedy's save there today. I was grateful I could watch it. You can see TG Carr's press release today, over 100,000 people watched that game across all their platforms. I was thinking to myself as well, why can't the GAA give senior championship games to TG Carr? You got 40 championship matches going to GAA Plus as a streaming subscription service. And like, I'm thinking about all the games that TG Carr do during the year. They do the club championships, they do the leagues, they do the ladies' football championship. And I'm sure if they would be interested, that they would love to maybe do some of these games. And look, I know the GA will make the argument at the moment that you have nobody else in town apart from RT who can do championship matches, and therefore there's a finite amount that RT can do. And therefore, I mean, we might have to create a paywall service. And also, we need to create as much revenue as possible to give back to the units of the association. But I'm just wondering to myself, you've an incredible match between Tipperary and Clare at Munster Under 20 hurling final last night on TG Carr, which does the clubs, does the leagues, does the ladies. And you have a senior hurling championship match on Saturday night that's not on terrestrial television between Tipperary and Clare. That does not make much sense to me. You carry Donegal next week, the repeat of the All-Ireland final, once again behind a paywall. And I'm just wondering, do we need a rethink here when it comes to the showcasing of our best matches? Because a lot of the shoulder games throughout the year are put on TG Carr and they do a great job of it. And it just doesn't seem to make sense to me that some of the key matches that volunteers will want to see throughout the year are not on terrestrial TV at the most important time of the year for the senior championship.
Yeah, but in general, you're kind of pro the fact that some games should be behind a subscription service? That's a no?
Maybe no, it's a no. As I said, there's two arguments here, right? There's the argument that there's no other game in town apart from RT. You can only show a finite amount of games. And I think there is another game in town. I think TG Carr could be the other game in town because they show so many other matches from underage to club to league to ladies football. The second thing, the question would be the monetization of it. The GA would argue that they put 83 cents in every euro back into the association that they receive every year in terms of revenue. The success story of the GA when it comes to revenue is off the scale. It's insane. It's 55 million, just over 55 million 10 years ago, 2015, 142 million last year. So I'm thinking to myself, they've done an incredible job in terms of sponsorships and gate receipts and redesigning the championships and getting people in the doors. And obviously Croke Park is delivering a lot of revenue as well. How much is enough money to give back into the association? Do you maybe need to cut your cloth a bit to bring it back a bit and say, you know what, we can't spend as much money in inter-county teams? I think it's more important for volunteers, for elderly people in Kerry or Donegal, for example, to be able to watch a really important match like that next week on a terrestrial service because it's such a big game. Because they might not have good broadband. They might not have access to a streaming service. And I don't think when you're looking at 55 to 142 million over a decade, how much more is it worth to put these games, some of these really important games, behind a paywall? What difference does it really make in terms of how much money the GAA is making?
I think actually a situation that would please most punters out there is that if there were all those blue ribbon games that were actually earmarked for free to air, and then the GAA fan who wants to watch, take Offaly Kilkenny for example, it wasn't televised anywhere last week, if they want to watch that, then that would be the one on the subscription service. But then maybe the subscription service isn't able to offer its high quality of production value as a result of not having that many subscriptions because they don't have any other good games. So that in itself is a little part of the debate. But I think people disagree on this the whole time. I think the argument is very valid. Should the GAA be different to the Premier League or the NFL or other organisations that constantly get mentioned as organisations that require you to pay your money to watch them?
What is the GAA supposed to be about as an amateur voluntary body? It's about the magic of the games. It's about the volunteers. It's about, obviously, revenue generation to give back to the association. But ultimately, it is meant to be a non-profit. And the balance of that is something I think that's worth having a conversation about. It does not make sense to me to watch a Munster Under-20 hurling championship final between Clare and Tipperary last night and see a fantastic, the best of Irish life. And then on Saturday evening this week, you have Tipperary against Clare in the Munster Round Robin, the All-Ireland champions. We saw the game last year in Ennis, which was crucial in terms of almost determining where the Liam McCarthy Cup would go when the All-Ireland champions are beaten in their own backyard, didn't get out of the Round Robin. Tipperary go on to win the All-Ireland. If Clare beat Tipperary on Saturday, it'll have a big impact on the Munster Senior Hurling Championship. It's behind a paywall. I do think there needs to be a rethink about that.
But what about the Ulster Final? It clashes with the Ulster Final. You can only air one on TV.
Is it not Saturday night?
Limerick Waterford is the Munster game then on GA Plus on Sunday. That's the other way around, which in itself is a huge game. There are clashes in the condensed season.
Well, that's the back to the condensed season again. But you're telling me that if TG Carr didn't have the chance to show those matches, they would turn it down?
If they were offered it, yeah. Of course they'd show them, yeah.
So they show so many matches already, and they show the matches which they do a fantastic service for the people. I don't know what Ben and Daniel think about
it. Let's not forget that there's Virgin Media on this as well. I mean, they're not obviously like Virgin in terms of soccer. They've lost their European coverage for next season. You know, there's possibility of maybe getting, you know, another sport onto their schedule.
Mm. Yeah, and they try to get involved in the latest rights conversation, and they couldn't quite meet the demands of what was on the table for Virgin, so they couldn't quite go all the way through that.
And also, how beneficial culturally would it be for Kenny Reid and Donegal, repeated the All-Ireland final last year, to be showcased with the Irish language as commentary?
Mm, true.
Yeah, it was for the league final, and I mean, this was a bigger game. That was a terrible outcome. I think people would be like, they'd be looking into like the omen of Kerry versus Donegal broadcast, Oscuelga once again. Surely Donegal will go back-to-back in such a scenario. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to send us a WhatsApp message. Dermot Keane has been in touch to say, I hope there's a good distance between Ben the Hammer and JD the Spurs man, with relegation looming for one of them.
We'll be keeping
a close eye on them, Dermot, as the evening unfolds. Dan Pitcher, yes. Bring us up to speed. What is happening in the world of sport?
So we'll start with soccer, and the Republic of Ireland internationals Lucy Quinn and Lily Ag look set to leave Birmingham City this summer. The club have reportedly decided not to renew their contracts. Quinn departs the newly crowned WSL2 champions after making 160 appearances since joining from Tottenham in 2021. Ag has endured a hugely difficult spell with injury, suffering a ruptured Achilles tendon after recently returning from an ACL injury layoff. Both players obviously now searching for new clubs ahead of the next season.
Okay, Arne Slot has been out talking about his future.
Yes, Arne Slot fully expects to remain in charge at Anfield next season despite growing speculation over his future. Pressure has mounted on the Dutchman after Liverpool failed to seriously challenge for the Premier League title this campaign. Reports linking the former Liverpool midfielder Xabi Alonso with a return to the club have added to uncertainty surrounding Slot's position. But Slot insists that he is part of Liverpool's plans and says that he is involved in discussions over potential new signings.
I have every reason to believe I'm the Liverpool manager next season. First of all, I'm contracted to this club. And second of all, from all the talks we are having. That is my take on it. But as you said, if you don't have the best season, especially if you compare it with last season, if you compare it with other season, maybe you have a different debate, but if you compare it with last season, this has definitely not been a great season. Then it's also normal that criticism comes.
We've also heard from Mikel Arteta today.
Yes, and potentially positive news surrounding Jurrien Timber. The Arsenal manager is saying that he could return before the end of the season as he continues his recovery from a groin injury. The defender has missed recent matches with Arsenal, also dealing with the loss of Ben White through a long-term knee problem. Arteta says that Timber has improved in recent days and is working hard to be fit for the closing weeks of the campaign, including the Champions League final against Paris Saint-Germain.
He wanted to be very close to the team. He's progressed a little bit in the last few days. He's feeling better. We're going to try to get him fit and available as quick as possible. But let's see. Obviously, he's been out now for a while, unfortunately. He's such an important player for us. We all know that. And he's doing everything that he possibly can to to help the team in any capacity. And I will know his leadership, his quality, and how much the team needs him. And yeah, he's trying everything that he can.
And you can bring us the latest from Chelsea.
Yes, their interim boss, Callum McFarlane, says that Pedro Neto, Alejandro Garnacho and the goalkeeper, Robert Sanchez, are all pushing to start in Saturday's FA Cup final after returning to training this week. Neto and Garnacho missed Chelsea's last two matches. Sanchez has recovered from the head injury he suffered against Nottingham Forest earlier this month. McFarlane also confirmed the captain, Rhys James, and or has rather come through recent appearances, though he'll have to continue his recovery. Off the pitch, though, speculation continues over who'll become Chelsea's new manager. I mentioned Xabi Alonso. He's also been mentioned for that position. McFarlane, though, wasn't going to be drawn on the next man in the door at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, there's a lot of names linked with the job. It's not really my place to say who's going to get it, who should get it, who's a good manager, who's not a good manager. My job is to prepare the team for Saturday, and that's all I'll be focusing on. Yeah, it's tough when you have a game midweek and you have a triple game week. It's tough. We've had a lot of them this year. But we're focused on ourselves. We're focused on how we prepare. We're playing against an excellent side and an excellent coach. So we need to be at our best, irrelevant if they've had a triple game week or not. So that's what we're focused on. I'm confident that we'll get hopefully a similar level of performance we got at Liverpool.
I haven't heard anyone other than fantasy football managers refer to the phrase triple game week.
Yeah, that was a new one on me today.
One of us.
Yeah, one of us, Callum McFarlane, give him the job. Gary Neville then, what's going on?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. The former Manchester United defender again being linked with a move into politics amid growing uncertainty over Andy Burnham's future as the mayor of Greater Manchester. Burnham has been tipped as a possible contender to run to Westminster if the Labour leadership battle emerges, with speculation that he could seek a parliamentary seat, though that has revived suggestions that Neville could be lined up as a potential Labour candidate for the Manchester mayor should Burnham step aside. Neville is a long-time Labour supporter, campaigned publicly for the party during the last general election. The former England international has never indicated publicly, though, that he wanted to run for office, but some months ago he spoke to us on Off the Ball.
To be fair, if you think about it logically, the deal that I've just done with Global for the overlap, the commitments that I've made with Declan to Cancelo and to Salford City, you can't go and be in politics and do the things that I'm doing and have committed to for the next 5, 6, 7 years. So it's impossible for me to go into politics because I'd have to basically give up the things that I love. I mean, Keir Starmer got criticised, well, he gets criticised a lot, but he got criticised heavily for going watching Arsenal, if you remember, earlier on in the season. I will never have someone tell me that I can't go and watch my team play football at the weekend.
Yeah.
No. And that was then. Who knows what the now is?
I don't know. It seems that he's having a pretty successful moment in his career right now, Gary Neville. The money sloshing around in terms of what his company is buying in terms of media would suggest that this is a guy who is on the way to becoming a billionaire. Like, is that outrageous? I know he's worth a couple of hundred million. I think, maybe he is really unbelievably altruistic and wants to give back to the nation and give up his business interests. I think this would be a bad career move if he were to do this.
I think it's a bad career move. I'm also not sure how comfortable I am with the fact the guy who'd be replacing Andy Byrne as the mayor of the city would be a guy who's got millions of investment interests in the city as it is. I think Andy Byrne leaving and going to Westminster is a pretty good thing when you compare it to some of the other people who might take over the Labour leadership. But I don't know then why you'd pivot to what would, you know, do we even know what's Gary Neville's policies? What's Gary Neville's thoughts on anything? We don't know.
He's definitely not a Tory.
No.
But that's all about we know.
Yeah.
All that we do and can say categorically as a fact is that if he was to become the Labour mayor, he would have millions of business interests in the city, which we know that Andy Burnham doesn't have. I just think it's a mental move. I also think it's a mental move on Labour's behalf. It would be on his behalf too.
Surely it's not going to happen.
No, I'm not sure. Like,
if it was a presidential system like the United States, maybe you could see something like that happening, but not in a... he just get bored to tears.
I'm willing...
And also, but politics has become quite like football. It's, you know, it's Stama's out, Burnham's in, Truss, Sunak, Johnson, it's... It's the coverage of it has turned into now football coverage.
I think we can take him at his word from the clip that we played from Off the Ball Breakfast. I'm willing to trust him on that anyway, that this might not be a runner. A couple of more interesting football stories here. Give us the Premier League Awards nominations.
Yeah, three Arsenal players are among the nominees for the Premier League's Player of the Year. Defender Gabriel, goalkeeper David Raya and midfielder Declan Rice represent the leaders, while Manchester City forwards Erling Haaland and Anthony Semenyo are among their rivals for the prize. Bosses, though, up for Manager of the Year, Keith Andrews, Brentford's boss, of course, Manchester United's Michael Carrick, along with Regis Labrie of Sunderland is up for the running there as well.
Any chance Keith Andrews wins this?
Feels like an honour to sit in the seat that he literally would have sat in while he looked at the whoever was hosting Off the Ball at the time. I think there is. Why not? He's won, I was looking at the record earlier, he's 14 wins, 13 losses. When Keith Andrews went into the job last year, this was a sure thing for relegation, according to many of the experts.
Everybody wrote
the so-called experts in England.
Yeah.
Why not? I think Antonio Areola probably has a shout to up there as well if Bournemouth finish in the Champions League. Like, with all due respect to Mikel Arteta, he does have one of the best squads in the Premier League. And I think it's probably, I don't want to say about time that he gets it over the line with Arsenal. But I do think the achievement of doing that compared to if Keith Andrews is going to get Brentford into European football, I think that's a whole different ball game altogether.
Can I ask you about all your emotions at the moment? Because I've gone from resigned to okay, maybe. And how are you at the moment?
Like in general, like in life, like how are you feeling on this Thursday evening?
You going to go out for some beers later? Because you're an Arsenal fan and you're a West Ham
fan. That's never been mentioned on the radio before, John. You just out of me.
Has it not?
No, I'm joking. It hasn't. It consistently gets mentioned. I try and rein it in, John. That's the whole point of this. Look at things a little bit too closely. I often get pelters online for not defending the club enough, which I always find amusing. But I guess you kind of have a bit of a dissonance when it comes to these situations, which, to be fair, kind of ruins the fan aspect of it. But I mean, first world problems and all of that. I just don't really think it's worth kind of getting too emotionally invested in something that is quite a partisan thing.
I could see the look in your eye there when I was saying that the magnitude of Arteta's achievement. I could see that raging look saying that, oh, what do you mean this Arsenal winning the league wouldn't be on the same magnitude? To answer John's question, yeah, it's not great, is it, when your club looks predestined to end up in the Championship? I think that Spurs results against Leeds, though, just gave me a little bit of glimmer of hope again. Yeah. And the fact that West Ham play before Spurs, I just don't think, like West Ham realistically have to win both games. Can you see West Ham winning both games? Probably not.
Even the Mayor of London wants Spurs to go down.
Yeah.
I want that stadium taken off West Ham.
He said it would 2.5 million if West Ham went.
To do the stadium.
Yeah.
Tottenham are staying up, though, right? Like it's very much in the power position now when it comes to the relegation.
The Villa game was big. Yeah. That gives me a bit of hope. But Chelsea will be banging for blood next week if West Ham can manage to get something at Newcastle. And then are Newcastle on the beach or not? I suppose is the question, really. If West Ham don't beat Newcastle, I think Spurs might just be okay.
Yeah, for sure. Give us the latest on Spygate.
Yes, the Championship playoff. Look, the EFL are hoping that it takes place, but there is to be a hearing next week. Into that, all they're saying is that it's to take place next week. They are hoping that it goes ahead, but basically are just warning that there could be changes. Obviously, this relates to the spy gate between Southampton, spying on Middlesbrough's training session. But EFL confident that it's going to go ahead.
Yeah. So there was a statement released today by the EFL, and they said that the disciplinary commission hearing is going to take place on or before Tuesday the 19th of May. So you read that, you think to yourself, God, this is a little bit vague, but the date remains under discussion and it's expected to be confirmed shortly. And then they're going to issue its decision as soon as possible following all the relevant submissions being considered, etc., etc. As you mentioned there, Dan, the EFL, this is quoting from their statement, continues to plan on the basis that the Championship playoff final will take place as scheduled on Saturday the 23rd of May. Which does kind of leave it up in the air as to, oh, so this is not a concrete thing. You are currently and continuing to plan on that basis. So that feels like a movable feast. Supporters should, however, be aware that the outcome of the disciplinary proceedings may yet result in changes to the fixture, i.e., I don't know, Middlesbrough versus Hull, or could it even be the fixture not happening? Could it be sort of an automatic? Does it void the fixture,
or
does it
void the previous fixture? That presents.
And Hull go straight up. Is that the what happens there?
Everything's on the table here. Well, the way you avoid a logistical nightmare is give them a pretty hefty fine and everybody forget about this. But I'm not sure if that's punitive enough.
That's like, do you really? I don't know if this is enough. Like the fact that it's happened before, for it to happen again, and the punishment was so poor the last time. It's nothing. The financial rewards of getting up to the Premier League offset any type of financial penalty that you will get for this. I do think, like, there's two sides of me. There's part of me going that you need to come down hard in Southampton. There's also part of me going Middlesbrough kind of, you know, pining for that spot in the final because of it is a bit like you had 46 games in the season to get it. They were in second for a lot of the season. I don't know. I just don't think you can pull a playoff final based on this.
Well, one of the main reasons why I think Southampton might be screwed is because of the Bielsa scenario and the fact that they did literally write a rule after 2019 saying that clubs cannot observe or attempt to observe another club's training session within 72 hours of a scheduled match. So they wrote the rule for this exact reason. And the previous one was a 200k fine on Bielsa's Leeds in 2019. I just have a feeling that this could go a different way and it could be a competitive punishment. Now, that could also be whatever happens next season, whatever league you're playing in, you will start with a 10-point deduction and that might well be the Premier League. So let's see what happens. It's a fascinating one. Dan, we're nearly out of time, but do you want to just give us the Munster and Ulster URC teams?
Yeah, Jack Crowley returns to the Munster starting team for Saturday night's massive URC clash with the Lions at Thomond Park. He comes in at out half and one of five changes to the side. Craig Casey captaining Munster at home for the very first time. Sean O'Brien, Niall Scannell, Jack O'Donoghue and Brian Gleeson also start. Scannell and John Ryan both included in the matchday squad and could make their final appearances at Thomond Park before retiring at the end of the season. Meanwhile, Ulster have named two academy players in their starting squad for tomorrow night's key meeting with Glasgow Warriors in Belfast. Bryn Ward starts number 8, while William de Klerk comes in at midfield alongside the returning James Hume, with Rob Herring also back from injury. Though in a further blow for Ulster, they will be without Ian Henderson for the Challenge Cup final. He's been handed a 3-game suspension for the red card he picked up playing against the Stormers last week.
Dan Pitcher, thank you very much.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.